So it's curious, isn't it, that we're starting with two shows that, in some respects, are of strikingly contrastive touch, sensibility, volume, temperature. But they're both younger women artists who present shows which have a minor in sculpture, as it were, and that deal in some way or another with invented personages, a sense of narrative, and a sense of the reinvention of the figure. Peter, to start with Nicola Tyson, what do we make of this body of work?
I've followed her work for a while, and she's one of my, I probably shouldn't use a, you know, favorite artists. And a long time ago, when I was still at Newsweek, I wrote a piece about three women sort of surrealist artists, and they were up and coming. I don't want to reveal anything, but I don't think Nicola's all that young. I think she's solidly mid-career. They were Elizabeth Olbert, Lisa Yuskovich, and Nicola Tyson, and my Nicola Tyson was my pick to click, which shows you what I know about the art world. Because Lisa Yuskovich is selling for millions at auction. Anyway, I'm delaying here. I like her work. This particular show seemed to me to be like a really, really good painter operating a little bit stiffly, like on the big stage, like a movie director when a movie director gets a really big budget. There is something kind of hard and arch about the paintings. I thought the best one in the show was the figure in the tree, which, you know, she has these intemperate letters to, you know, artists that she's written. I haven't seen him perform. I teach a little class at NYU in criticism for undergraduate art history majors, and they reviewed, and three of them picked this show. And I meant to plagiarize and bring, you know, those and pass it off as my own tonight, but I forgot them.
That's the etymology of your name?
Is that yeah. Uh-huh. And that's a hard G.
Yes.
Why I pronounce it with a hard
yes.
G. And the sculpture, I haven't figured it out, but there was something really engaging, and I liked it about it. Mm-hmm. But that's a little sort of territory that immediately you go there, and everybody says de Kooning Clam Diggers and Medoro Rosso, which mm-hmm. is what bounced around in my head. So in the end, I missed the sort of some of the tentativeness, sorry, of the of the older paintings. These seem just like she had it locked in, you know.
Right. Yes. Patricia, are you comfortable with a designation of Tyson as a latter day surrealist? Is that a convenient, useful peg, or are these about something very different to you?
I mean, I can see, I've heard that said before. It's not useful to me personally, but I don't know, I had a kind of a different reading of the show just in terms of the sculpture versus the paintings. I think maybe I appreciated her, seeing a great painter make great paintings, and I felt like I understand the idea of trying to capture that sketch quality with sort of a new medium for her, but actually in both of the shows, I just feel like the three-dimensional, it didn't work for me necessarily, so. Mm-hmm. Or it didn't quite capture what she can do in painting.
All right, so what can she do in painting?
Let's see, I think it goes back to the idea of this sort of the inviting, I mean, if we're not talking about just strictly materials, there's this invitation to a narrative that happens where the paintings, it's interesting you called them so polished, but they do seem quite open. So you feel like you can kind of exist with them in a way and have a conversation in your mind about what these figures are doing. I mean, they're clearly very beautifully made figures, but they're not complete to me, or they're not closed. So I feel like with the sketches in three dimensions, they feel just like only about the material and about what's happening and less about that there's something more to engage with for me.
James, I find them enticingly brittle, actually, as forms. And then I was slightly disconcerted by the way that sits with the, again, enticingly high-octane color. But did they make much sense to you?
Well, the paintings are a little bit like community service murals gone wrong. You know, it's she, you know, takes these kind of stock images of kids or look like dogs and then kind of goes back in and kind of funks it up, scars it up. That's interesting, maybe, but actually I want to pick up a little bit on what Peter was saying. I think there is a little bit of a problem with the polish of them. They're all seem a little trying a little too hard. There's a little too much, I think, polish in the paint application that goes against that kind of junked up style. I mean, she goes, I don't know if this is her line, but it's from the press release, that she's looking for a mock sublime mad taste, and I think there's a little bit of a studied madness there rather than true madness.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would probably need to be studied, wouldn't it, in order to give us such a standardized form, Peter or Patricia, who would ever like to take issue with me, because while I was enjoying, I could have enjoyed each painting in the show, I did feel that this was a stand. There was a standard issue. I think there was like one which had a solitary figure, but with an inscrutable object in it. All the others were pairs, couples. It was couples evening. Was it? Did it need to be? Did that help?
It's interesting. In her letter to Picasso, if you've read her letter to Picasso, she accuses him of the same thing, this sort of standardized look. But I think what she's doing is, maybe that's more content-based. I don't know. I mean, did they need to be couples? I don't understand the question necessarily. What if there's something wrong with having a number of paintings of the same thing or the same two figures? Or what would,
yeah,
what would
it's
you
a,
take
it's,
issue
it's a,
with that?
I take issue with the standardization, the repetition, the, you know, couldn't we have a different kind of composition? Is there something specific about coupledom in these paintings? Because they didn't seem to be married couples or natural opposites. It just seemed to be, surreal personages. There's two in each canvas, and there's bright colors behind. So it just seemed to be a product that I had that feeling. Whereas, as I say, each individual one was fine.
I think this goes a bit to what I was saying about the polish. The study of these works, there's a little bit of a sameness there. Mm-hmm. And in terms of the relationships of the two figures, there was some relationship. There was a boy and a girl, or, you know, a boy and his creepy dog, devil. But did they really stand up on their own as narratives? Not really to me.
No, they didn't seem like narrative hardly at all. They seemed hieratic somewhat. Peter, did you find yourself constructing stories to go with each couple?
No, I'm usually the last guy in line to, you know, get with the narratives. It's probably partly of my aesthetic, you know, basic set, my baseline going out, which is leans toward formalist. So I'm looking at the paint. Somebody used to say you could always tell painters at an exhibition because they're the ones that go up and kind of try to feel around the back of the canvas to see how it's stretched, you know. So I was looking at things, these little things that were either I liked. Now, her figures themselves, the sort of, and I'll put it in scare quotes, the monstrosity element, works with me, and I think this is one of those things. If if you have a kind of dour existentialism and that's the way you go, the figures might reach you, you know, and the relationship between her and Bacon is obvious. I mean, she takes from Bacon. But there were like little things that bothered me. One of them was the constant the horizon line, or the thing between the wall and the floor, is absolutely sort of razor sharp. And the other thing, I don't have the older paintings fresh in my mind, but she does this thing where she has a little line and then the paint kind of comes up to it and she leaves the line, and that's what makes all the crinkles and wrinkles. And it is a little bit pat. I wouldn't want to say number painting, but it is a little bit pat. The figures, though, I take the point about the something I learned here tonight. I take the point about the ones in the pairs not relating so much, and maybe that's why I liked the best painting. I thought was the one in the tree, mm-hmm. because if you're going to take from Bacon, it's interesting to take like from a funny Bacon, a strange, peculiar Bacon, like Van Gogh on the road.
Right. An okay. Atypical, yes.
But dogs. And I just had this odd thought that if any of you, it seemed to me the reverse. If any of you saw this movie called District 9, the South African movie about the thing. Well, she sort of did the reverse. There you have those sort of the prawns, you know, those strange, you know, inner outer space aliens that had, they marched around and had gestures like humans. She takes a human thing and sort of pushes it in the other direction. Figures themselves work for me, but I take the point about the pair's composition being a little inert.
I mean, I actually did like the way in which there's a sort of pentimenti of almost incised lines that gave a kind of sculptural heft to these figures. And I found that was actually something that really energized and animated the paintings. And for me, therefore, made a natural segue to sculpture, although the sculpture is modeled, not carved, which would have made more sense to that sensibility. But Bacon, yes, the references to Bacon, or the allusions are, as you say, certainly there.
Well, he's one of the artists she writes letters to, right?
Yes.
I mean, he's one of the ones.
The thing is that in the paintings, I don't see him writing back. because it's a much more, although there's a pop element in his colour, it's a much more tutti-frutti chroma in Tyson, and also there isn't actually a dynamic or existential tension between figure and ground. It's just, it seems to be a decorative trope. Would you want to disagree with that, Patricia?
Well, I actually think she's said that she sees the connection with Bacon, not that that matters, but I don't think that's something that she's attempting. I just think it's important to remember, and I guess I have to be the one to say it, that she's also responding to this sort of, she is coming from a feminist, like very feminist perspective, and she is responding to this whole sort of history of male painters. And I think, you know, with the figures, not to read into it too much, but with the couples, I feel like the disjointedness of it is could be partially intentional, and when read from more feminist perspective is kind of interesting to me. So to see these two figures that are drawn separately and then put together into the same canvas when they're expanded, and to kind of understand them in this strange universe that isn't really readable, and to not be able to really impose a narration on it, but in my mind to kind of always have there be a question of narration, I think it's interesting. It keeps me looking, and I saw the show a couple of times, and I still would go see it again and probably see something a little bit different in terms of what I thought was happening narrationally.
Yes.
Which I like. So.
Thing is that you're always at a rhetorical disadvantage if you like some painting and you're going to, because I like the one you said that was complimentary, enticingly brittle, I like that. But if you know, you can hit the color with Tutti Frutti, and it's hard to defend against something like that, to say, oh, I like it. But I will on the color say, I think in her previous work, there was, you know, she used to have these sort of dried blood reds and these custard yellows and things, and it would mix it up. And these were a little bit, to me, you know, the chartreuse green and the red that went toward pink, they were all in that halfway between, you know, that five-value gray, although fully chroma, you know, chroma level. And it was too frontal, all mm-hmm. of those paintings.
Too graphic designerish, perhaps.
You always take what's said and make it more severe. I wouldn't accuse her of being a graphic designer. I like graphic design,
and I, as I said, I find these very enticing paintings, and I enjoyed each one individually.
How do you spell Tyson?
Perhaps it's a pun on Tyson.
Never mind.
Like as plagiarized as on Plagans. You never know. A final thought, James, on Tyson. Peter introduced it by saying that she was shortlisted as when she was an emerging artist with Lisa Yuskovich, who coincidentally has a show just around the corner at David Zwirner, concurrently. Yuskovich, one can certainly see, without there being a clear feminist message, a set of womanly concerns. Do you think that do you buy the idea of a feminism at work in Nicola Tyson?
You know, it would be hard for me to say I saw it really operating there. It doesn't seem to be frontal to me, but I'm a guy. What can I say?
Well, yes, but you're a cultural connoisseur and critic guy. You're not a man in a bar. So you're a man on a panel. So, Patricia, you mentioned the feminism. Do you feel our consciousness is being raised by these paintings?
No, I mean, I think that's an old definition of feminism. I think what's interesting to me about her her practice is that she, I mean, I think we keep sort of talking about these letters, but she does do these performances where she stands up and she reads these letters in front of her paintings.
Yes.
Excuse me. And she's spoken about it as a way to write around her paintings as opposed to about them or directly into them. So I see it as a complementary practice. I don't think she would do that if there wasn't a compliment there. Mm. And I think it illuminates that for me more. But I think that's probably because, maybe it's not obvious, but I don't think feminism or anything needs to be obvious to exist.
No, we don't want anything obvious.
Well, I will also say, I mean, there are a number of children in this work.
Yes.
And they all seem to be kind of like scarred up. I mean, it's not very maternal of her, you could say.
Right. No, we wouldn't want our feminist painters to be too maternal. That would, but there is, however, a tenderness towards the world, female or childish or otherwise, in the work of Amy Cutler. Let's turn our attention to her. And Patricia, perhaps I could actually ask for your thoughts first on this score. Anything you particularly like to say, or would you like me to ask you a question?
I would just say, you know, of this work, it's definitely something that's always captured my imagination. I mean, I wrote a poem about, I saw this show and I saw the book, and I wrote a poem not about it, but sort of in along with it, that it inspired me. So I always like work that can bring something out in me creatively. And about the work directly, so that's my relationship to it. I've never written criticism about it, and it doesn't seem to invite that from me necessarily. It's very, like you said, tender. I respond to the images of the women working. I thought this show in particular was interesting because of the fact that it showed her working process, and it was kind of like a way, you sort of saw the artist alongside her images and kind of the working process of the artist, and then the way that she viewed work as this sort of transcendental kind of experience for women, but not women. I mean, they're women in her images, but perhaps we can see them as people outside
yes.
of that. I don't know. I respond to it, I guess, positively again.
Yes, I can say I feel that I do too. I'm very struck. It's a rare pleasure, really, to be thinking about critically an exhibition that elects printmaking as its medium, and that we're not having to cordon printmaking off as being some sort of quaint craft that we don't really look at in the way that we perhaps don't really look. There's no reason why we shouldn't, but that perhaps we sideline ceramics, for instance. And when we do look at prints, we usually get a little too technical, a little too connoisseurial, quite unnecessarily, in ways that we don't necessarily when we talk about painting and sculpture or indeed video or installation. But it's striking that she chooses a printmaking medium, James. Did that strike you? And did it seem to you that there were things that were being plumbed in these works that are specific, the medium specific in a energizing, positive way?
Well, I'd say, you know, I'm a process guy, and this is a process show. I really like that. It seemed that the content of the work directly related to the process of its creation. So you can see the narratives, or the partial narratives, you can construct narratives from the work of hair being woven and grown, and at the same time in the show are all the different components of the printmaking process. The plates are there, the kind of proof pieces are there. I mean, there's so much there. That may be my only criticism of the show, where I felt that it was a little stuffed with a whole lot of things. Photographs, there was a dress, sculptures, in addition to there being, I think, work from kind of several narratives that she's working with. Mm. And I wonder if the show maybe would have been a little clearer if, let's say, she decided to take just kind of one narrative theme that she's working on and have that be the show rather than having the viewer kind of construct everything. It's possible. It's interesting to construct, but it takes a long time to enter into.
Right, right. Did you have a bit of a sense, Peter, of the market stall, of it being laid on thick, the different options here?
No, and I have to confess, this is one of these things. Amy Cutler goes by me, either under me, over me, around me, or the side. I don't relate to it, and when James said something about, hey, after all, I'm a guy, there's something about a kind of delicate twee surrealism that fails to reach me. I looked at it, I understood what was going on there, and maybe I'm a little too conscious, or conscious in the wrong way, of what's out there. But between some photographers, I couldn't give you a coherent list of names, but between some photographers and some painters, there seems to be a thing about, you know, kind of either 19th century or Nordic people wandering around in the woods with a lot of empty space around them doing slightly odd things.
The Mama Anderson for me.
And you know, and I'm not going to say it's bad, but it doesn't, you know, it doesn't reach me. What you said about the cordoning off of printmaking and, you know, ceramics, this is an old argument, but I'm going to say, you know, they do this partly to themselves. Cutler doesn't do this, but, you know, there's Ceramic Monthly and there's a magazine called Print, and they you can't have it both ways.
Well, there's a magazine called Art in America, so there's a magazine called Sculpture.
Yeah, I know, I've been at ceramics conventions,
yes,
where people complain about ceramics is cordoned off, you know,
right,
and a lot of the cordoning is done, you know, it's self.
Yes.
Anyway, into the only thing that struck me as discordant, and I like that little sculpture in the middle. That was the most intriguing thing to me,
mm-hmm,
you know, that little, the circular.
Sure.
But the dress with the puppets on the hands, I thought was, you know, a bridge too far. I would have simply, you know, please take that out, because it was out of proportion. It had a whole different color kind of thing to it. Its presence as an object was kind of much more wham, you know, than the delicate other stuff. But I'd sort of, you know, beg out of it. If I were writing and somebody said, do you want to review the Amy Cutler show, I'd say, you know, could I not?
Right, right. But Peter has totally put his finger on what could be certainly drawn as very legitimate criticisms of the show. Patricia, do you feel that how much is this, do you feel, Cutler's just Cutler's sensibility coming out, the touch, the delicacy, the experimentation in different media, and how much is it actually as a deliberate, intentional statement that the presentation and also the choice of media, how much do they actually meld with what you feel to be the mood or the message or the narrative at play?
Well, I mean, I hated that dress too, and I actually didn't even like the photograph or the... I just like her little worlds that she either draws or that she has in the prints, and I think that showing the process of that printmaking process was interesting to me as well. So I didn't like the move to three dimensions in this show either. But it didn't ruin it for me necessarily. I think the question was how much of that is her? I don't know. I don't know why people choose to explore these different mediums as artists when they're quite accomplished in one area. I mean, it might be a challenge, or it seems that I'm not to get into her head, but there's a possibility of trying to see something more clearly in a different way. I think the way the show was set up, what was kind of interesting was just seeing the echoes. So the reason that they put that dress in was that the image was repeated somewhere else.
Right.
And so I can see why the curators put it together that way. But sometimes, I guess, when you're following that kind of a thing, like, oh, well, this connects to this and this connects to that, you lose the whole sense of how the room looks. And I think that might be a case of that kind of situation.
I think it's interesting. I think we're saying some of the same thing. I think this show had a little too much in it. And whether we need to cut down on the media of the show or cut down on the narrative of the show, it could have benefited from some editing.
I felt that I felt a little lost as to whether it was intentional or just slightly clumsy. Because if you're in a Karen Kilimnik show where you get a plethora of mediums and where you bounce from one to the other, you never lose the sense that this is absolutely being thrown at you as a juxtaposition, and it's not a sort of market stall like hedging of bets. It is a unified statement. I feel that certainly her work in printmaking is that's where it really comes to life. So I'm surprised really. Even I always love seeing plates. I mean printmaking plates. But it felt a little bit science museum-y, you know, to be shown that, oh, right, it's printmaking. I mean, we don't need to see it. People aren't shown the palette of a painter. So, why not just... I think it might have been a stronger show if it had just been very starkly lit and then just a dense narrative built around just the prints. I think it would have done it for me better.
You want to... This is over there, but you kind of want to... It's a very feminine show, and you want a kind of very male installation of it. I have a very small nit, though, to pick about... I'll go counter on the printmaking thing. When I first seen... she does drawings, her line gets stiffened, I think, negatively, when she has to draw on plate, because it's kind of, you have to do that. And on a couple of those prints, and on that first wall where you come in on your left, I mean, I did have a real, so I was going to say tutti frutti colors, I'll blur mine. It reminded me of those etchings that lawyers have in their office about people playing tennis and, right, all the bad things that happen in that. But her line in when she makes the noses on people, the women, bending over when the pigs come down. It was just, there was something too cartoony and flat, and I thought, she just had the pencil or a pen on a piece of paper have a little more flow to it. So I'm a little bit counter about, I like the hand-colored stuff, but it stiffens up drawing in metal.
Yes, but that's with a master, that's a good thing. And sorry to use a sexist term, because when we're talking about women. But when you're marshalling your means, that's a great thing, because when it stiffens up, it gives us kind of tension and awkwardness. Of course, if you're like Rembrandt making an etching, there's no awkwardness, but there's still tension. The etchings actually reminded me strongly of Paula Rego's work. I don't know if anyone else. Paula Rego. Her fairy tales use the same medium and have a similar kind of feel to them to me. I would reject as essentialist the idea that a rigorous display is masculine and an all over the place one is feminine. I mean, perhaps we should take a show of hands, females only, on that one to see which of us gets the brownie point for. Feminist critique.
I do think, though, if you limit the show in that way, it does risk becoming a print show, for one thing, which is what we're we're talking we don't want. And also you lose, I think, the sense of process. It's interesting that process is working in multiple ways in this show, in the narrative and also in the production of the work. And if you remove one of those completely, I think you lose a component, an important component of her work.
That's a fair point. I accept that one. Great. Well, it's a good time now, actually, both on Nicola Tyson and on Amy Cutler, to give the audience a chance to share their views. We've got a roving mic, have we? Marvellous. So please do wait for the mic, both so that we can hear you and we can record you. And by being recorded, you consent to being podcast, by the way. A little... but don't let that inhibit you. Please say what you... say what you feel like saying. Great. Well, let's start with Cutler, as we just finished talking about Cutler. Any comments on the Cutler show, or questions to the panel about it, or challenges to what we had to say about it? Yes, please. Thank you.
Be an illustrator. None of you mentioned it was that at all, and I related the prints because it was a print that immediately to illustration, but there was no, I haven't seen the show, so I'm assuming there was no text with it, but to me, when I saw it, I immediately thought of people like Edward Ardizzone and that sort of illustration, or an illustration to a Dickens book or something like that.
Yes, I think that's a very fair point. I don't know. It was certainly something I was thinking about, so I'm not sure why I didn't mention it. It reminded me rather of the, it put me in mind of the Herbert Read novel, The Green Book, which is a narrative set in the 19th century. It's funny how we did get into a little back and forth on Tyson's graphic designer aspect. And yet, perhaps the elephant in the room with Cutler is that we didn't mention is illustration. I found myself going around thinking, it's illustrative, and that's okay. I mean, what's wrong with illustrative? I mean, I hate it. There are these orthodoxies in modernist criticism that postmodernism hasn't cured us of, that the decorative or the illustrative are a bad thing. Are my co-panelists simply so over that prejudice that they didn't need to mention the illustrative in Cutler?
Over it.
Yes. Over it, over it. You're over it too?
I hope so. I grew up with that. I mean, that was big when I was in art school and as an undergraduate, and abstract painting was around, and everything that was figurative was accused by the people who were going off and doing abstractions as being illustration. I'm hope that we're over that. I mean, Greenberg used to have his famous term of homeless representation in abstract paintings, whereby he thought the methods of a figurative painting mainly value, you know, light and shadow, in an abstract painting was out of place. You know, it was really a figurative painting. You just couldn't tell what it was a figurative painting of. You could probably make a parallel criticism of kind of a homeless illustrative quality, which is simply looking for a text. But I didn't find that. They didn't bother me in the case of Amy Cutler. And she seemed like, you know, that'd be a fine collaboration. You know, Amy Cutler's visuals with somebody else's poems, as people have done, or short stories, as people have done. Mm-hmm. Centuries.
Right. Great. Any more on Cutler? Yes, thank you.
You mentioned the process in the Cutler, and my question, unfortunately, is about Tyson, so I'm speaking
okay.
A little bit. But my question is this, could you help me in any way bringing together Tyson's paintings with her sculptures? I can see the sculptures there as a kind of sketch that enlightens your understanding of her process, and that leads back to Cutler and the process that you talked about that she, or the show, exhibited. And I'm wondering, Why are we interested in their process?
Yes, James, you said you're a process guy, and you know that's legit. But does being a process guy help you offer us a reading of either artist?
Well, let me go back to your Tyson comment. I think your question about connecting the painting and the sculpture is also my question. I don't think they connected very well in the way they are presented. I mean, I actually had to go back to the gallery because I went in the wrong door. You know, they're actually in different buildings or something. And I didn't think they connected very well. One didn't help me understand the other. I think with Cutler, it's the opposite, where I think her process helps me understand the narratives in her work. And so process itself can illuminate a lot about what's going on, combined with the fact that I'm just naturally interested in what artists are doing, and I like when I can see that happening out in front of me.
Right, yeah. Yes, a lady in the front.
Well, while she's waiting for the mic, I said this might be overly schematic, but I just put it out there as a possibility. Tyson in her painting seems to start from a figurative premise and then sort of beat it back into something, you know, that's not quite figurative. And in those sculptures, she adds a dimension, but she seems to be working up from the stuff into a figuration, and it isn't quite there yet. I mean, it's fairly abstract stuff. So you have two dimensions starting with figurative, drifting toward abstraction in a funny kind of way, and the other one, three dimensions starting with the stuff and hoping to conjure something. And as long as I just want to throw in one other thought, the thing about the monstrosity effect and the scarred dog and the things like that, I'm probably maybe a little bit insensitive, but, you know, there was a time when people thought that, you know, Picasso, two eyes on the same side of the head, what's going on here? And after a while, we learned to look at those things and read through those distortions and say, yeah, you know, it's a person standing there. And I think, I'm not saying in 50 years it'll turn out the same thing with Tyson, but I don't think we should be too concentrating on the kind of, you know, look of some of the thing,
which is definitely when you have whole shows, whole bodies of work, and indeed a whole career that makes that the way of doing business, that you all the more as you get used to it perhaps lose what made it distinctive in the first place. Yes.
I was interested in the kind of labor that was going on with all the women, the kind of women in isolation and working with each other, and probably working all day and into the evening, and then going back and doing more work for dinner. And I was reminded of some people that I talked to from Poland who were girls who worked in a silkscreen shop. And they couldn't talk to one another because they had elephant noses on, and the noses were led to the outside air, so that they went around with these long, loose things that went like dryer, you know, dryer hoses that went to the outside to get air. And they worked like that all day. And it was a little bit like looking at people who were peasants, who were working in that kind of state. And I think of also the people that are out there commenting on how many people are out of work and how many people used to do labor like that that might like the job back that was that simple.
Right. Yes, at the back.
Not to sort of belabor the process issue, but I thought that, to me, that was really the gulf that separated the exhibitions. When I was looking at the Nicola Tyson show, it occurred to me that she may have been able to paint all those paintings with two brushes. The fracture of the surface was pretty consistent throughout, to the point that I thought that she was just phoning it in on a lot of paintings. Whereas in Amy Cutler's exhibition, whilst maybe not everything that was in the show was amazing, she was at least pushing materials in a bunch of different directions simultaneously. And I felt that there was a kind of sincerity behind what she was doing. Whereas the Crayola Sculpey formations just seemed kind of pedestrian to me. And I think that Amy Cutler's ability to kind of use these elements and then communicate a reasonably clear narrative with a point of view, I thought actually made that exhibition really poignant and stuck with me in a way that I thought, you know, Nicola Tyson's, I thought actually was really quite forgettable. But that's
great.
Just my comment.
Okay.
Thank you.
Fantastic.
I agree with that. Thank you.
All right. He's the man. We'll get him on next time. Good. Marvelous. So I think we're ready, Molly, to have a look at our next two PowerPoint presentations.